Just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Working Class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. And we are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. I'm a public school teacher, and I co-host every second Monday of the month with Rachel Haynes, but Rachel is out this month, so we will look forward to her returning next month. Typically, we interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today on the phone is Erica Strauss-Chavaria. Welcome, Erica.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. And did I butcher your last name, or did I do all right?
It was so close. Chavaria.
Chavaria, the accent is over the I. Okay, gotcha. Well, Erica, tell us a little bit about your background and experience in education.
Sure. So I am heading into my 10th year of teaching. I teach in Howard County, Maryland, which is about 15 minutes south of Baltimore City.
Okay.
I actually teach at the high school that I graduated from in a city called Columbia in Howard County. I didn't initially think I wanted to be an educator. My mom is an educator, and I wanted to try something different, but I ended up getting a master's degree in international law and human rights in Costa Rica, and then came back to the States and realized that I did actually want to be a teacher to incorporate human rights and my love for Spanish and the Spanish language, which is what I teach high school.
Ah, okay. You're teaching Spanish in high school.
Yep, Spanish high school, yep.
Yeah, great. And so sort of inspired to do what? Be a little more specific about what you were inspired to do to get into teaching?
Well, you know, I've always, I grew up in an education household, so I was well aware of educational issues. My mom was very active in educational justice. She was a professor of education, actually.
Okay.
And so I always was surrounded by kind of like an educational justice world, but I was really steadfast in wanting to do something different. Which is why I ventured out to Costa Rica to get an international law degree.
Yes.
I'm fluent in Spanish. I love the culture and the language. And when I came back to the States, I had a lot of conversations with my mom, and I finally just realized that I wanted to give students an experience that I didn't have. I was not a very good student, and I didn't feel like school fit my needs. I was suspended on several occasions, and I never felt like school was a place that I could really be me authentically. And so I realized that I wanted to incorporate my love for Spanish, my human rights background, as well as provide an experience for students that I didn't think I ever had.
Gotcha.
And I wanted to do that in the place that I myself was a student. So that luckily I'm back at the school that I graduated from.
Yeah, that's interesting that you were interested in going back there. And did you find that, was it difficult? You mentioned that you got suspended. I'm not surprised that you seem like you're a bit of a troublemaker. And I mean that in the most positive sort of way. But did that present some challenges going back to the school where you had been a student?
Actually, it's funny. So, yes, in many ways. I actually was suspended... But the principal at the time was trying to make an example out of me. There were some policies that the administration was trying to enact when I was a freshman in high school, policy changes that would have very negatively affected Black and Brown students. They wanted to make it so that only students in GT and honors classes could take fine arts classes like dance and music and chorus. And we had an opt-out program where you could opt out 2 days a week and take an entire day of fine arts. And it had been open to every student, and then they wanted to change it so it was only going to be open for GT and honors students as opposed to students within what they call regular on-grade level classes,
yes.
Which, you know, in our building would have affected many of our Black and Brown students because we know that part of racism in education is that students are tracked. In ways that are unjust. And so I organized with other students, and we did walkouts and sit-ins, and I ended up having lawsuits and was backed by the ACLU pro bono and won. And so the one time when I skipped school after that entire ordeal, the principal, who was not too happy with me at the time anyway because of the ruckus that I had caused, my first offense suspended me, and that was that. So.
Okay. Wow. Interesting story. You mentioned you've been teaching for about 10 years now, and what are you enjoying about teaching right now? What are the highlights for you these days?
Honestly, 100% my students.
Mm-hmm.
My students are the loves of my life. I will do anything for them. I look forward to spending time with my students every single day. That's what makes my day fun and interesting. And I feel like I'm hanging, you know, of course, in a structured learning environment. But I wake up every morning looking forward to being able to hang out with my students and hear how their day is going and watch them learn and hope to provide a safe and culturally responsive school environment for them. I teach Spanish, but I really consider myself a racial justice educator. And so everything that I teach is through a racial justice and social justice lens. So we don't just do grammar in isolation. We always find a way to connect it to real life issues. I teach the majority of my students are Black. And, you know, I make sure that we talk about real life. You know, it's not just conjugating verbs.
Gotcha.
So it's my students. My students keep me, you know, even if I come in the morning in a bad mood or whatever I'm feeling that day, or I'm not motivated, or, you know, you're feeling burned out, as we educators do very often feel, right away my students lift my spirits.
Yeah.
And I do everything for them. Everything else leads to frustration is the everything else about education. It's
right.
Never the students.
Right, right. Okay. Well, good. So I first became aware of your existence at the National Education Association at the Representative Assembly, this last one, just last month. Talk about your involvement with your union at a local level or state level. How involved are you?
So to be honest, right now I'm not very active in my local at all. I am on the National Education Association's Board of Directors, so mm-hmm. I'm one of four of Maryland's representatives on the board, national board, which also means that I'm on the Maryland State Education Association's Board of Directors. So I'm very involved with the state and the national level.
Gotcha. Are you still there? We have a new engineer a new engineer today, so we're good. Keep going.
So a lot of the work that I do, union-wise, is statewide and on that national scale as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take all of the work that I do on the national state level, and I fight really hard to make changes within my school system.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very vocal in my local school system as well. The superintendent knows me well,
uh-huh.
And as do my administration, and so the community is well aware of what I fight for here in on the local level as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's jump into the NEA Representative Assembly that took place over that first week of July. Let's talk about some of the proposals that were discussed and debated mm-hmm. on the floor. And I'd like to start with there were a couple that I know that you brought to the floor as the maker, mm-hmm. and then maybe there's some others you want to touch on too. But let's start with, I think it was the first time that I heard you speak with your proposal, your new business item regarding reparations for descendants mm-hmm. of enslaved Africans. Talk about what motivated you to bring that forward and whatever else you want to say about that.
Sure. So, I believe that part of our job as educators is to really focus on racial justice in education. Everything that happens in our society, every injustice that exists affects our families and our communities and our students on a daily basis. And mm-hmm. if people are in education to teach a content, then they're in the wrong field. We're teaching human beings, and that means that we are part of a community.
Yes.
I am really fortunate and honored to be on the board of an organization called Racial Justice Now,
mm-hmm.
Which was co-founded by a dear friend and sister of mine, Zakiya Sankara Jabbar, and her husband, Hashim Jabbar, is the current director.
Okay.
And this organization is a community-based organization that grew out of grassroots organizing. Zakiya was dealing with her preschool son at the time, who was being suspended from preschool
mm-hmm.
In Ohio, in Dayton. And she realized that something wasn't right. How was her, young black preschool son being suspended?
Yeah.
And so that is, looking into what the systems were in place that was causing that to happen, and the school to prison pipeline is what kind of prompted this organization to be founded.
Okay.
And so a lot of the work that they do is around racial justice and fighting against institutional systemic racism.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big pushes that we talk about is reparations. For enslaved descendants of enslaved Africans,
mm-hmm.
That is also in tandem with an organization called a Black Education Network, and really both organizations have been involved in the movement for reparations for quite some time now, quite recently reparations is actually one of the things that's being debated on a national level in terms
yes.
of the campaigning for presidency.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that it's part of the dialogue now. It's getting a lot of movement. There has been a bill, that has been in existence, and it comes up all the time. I believe it's H.R. 40. Senator Booker actually submitted a partner Senate bill.
Okay.
And so the organizations that I'm a part of, Racial Justice Now, has been part of that movement. And so, I know that generational wealth gaps and the fact that this country was built off of slave labor and all of the effects in the meantime since then, all the way through, 400 years of injustice and terror and state-sponsored terrorism and institutional systemic racism and how that impacts our students, and how all of that, you know, seeps into our school system.
Yes.
You know, that to me, and that was something important that I thought that we as the largest educators union in the country needed to take a stand on that topic and that issue and call for reparations, because our families are impacted by that still to this day, and we need to be, as educators, we need to be on the front lines of that fight.
And that proposal did pass, correct?
It did pass, yes. It absolutely did. And not only that, NBI, so there were three parts to that. There was a new business item which called for having tele town halls and conversations conjunction with COBRA, or NCOBRA, which is another organization in the fight for reparations, and economist Derek Hamilton, but also you know, to get educators involved in that discussion. There was also a legislative amendment that was passed that would allow for NEA to lobby for bills that are that support reparations.
Okay.
And then there was also a resolution that was passed, which basically is NEA's belief statement that basically states that NEA believes that reparations should be that believes in the fight for reparations, believes that reparations should happen.
Yes. So I'm curious, when you're working on these NBIs and when you're bringing them to the floor, was this something that was a group effort? Did you partner with somebody and sort of in the wordsmithing, or was this an Erica Strauss Chavarria effort alone?
Okay, nothing is ever an Erica Strauss effort alone.
Yes. Okay.
ever. I first of all, it's not my duty to do it alone. So definitely I worked with Racial Justice Now. I also worked with NCOBRA, and I also was in a lot of communication back and forth with Cecily Meyer Cruz, who is from UTLA, and also the chair of the Black Caucus of NEA.
Yes.
And she and I worked together as well. I made sure I had that she was that she approved of everything, that the Black Caucus approved of everything that was being pushed forth for reparations. So it was with the blessing and the support and approval of Cecily and the Black Caucus as well.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. Erica, tell us about that next proposal, or NBI, regarding Palestinian human rights.
Yeah, so this NBI was the, I think, the one that caused the most stir at RA this year. So I am a woman of Jewish Hebrew heritage, and I believe that it is my duty as someone of Jewish heritage to call out the gross human rights violations that are occurring at the hands of the Israeli military, the state of Israel, against the Palestinian people, and to speak out against apartheid-like conditions and the occupation, and most specifically recently, a lot of articles have been coming out by Israeli news sources that thousands of children a month are being detained by Israeli. By Israeli soldiers and being held and tortured, and so, you know, I feel like it is my duty to call out that injustice, especially since you know, there's a lot of focus for NEA right now on making sure that we are a racial justice oriented organization and association, and that we are doing a lot about the fight against the concentration camps in the United States right now that are detaining migrant children and their families.
Yes.
And so I thought that it was you know, equally as important to make sure that we're calling that out as well. It's important to note that I hear it all the time that it was anti-Semitic, that it's an anti-Jewish piece of legislation, that there was a lot of backlash, and I've actually received a lot of backlash since then. Luckily, I have a community that's supporting me. But there is a movement of many, many rabbis, Jewish organizations, synagogues, and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of Jews in Israel and here in the United States that are speaking out against the atrocities that are occurring.
Yes.
And so I wanted to bring that to the floor. I did have support from many Jewish members of NEA who were delegates and partnered with several Muslim and Palestinian sisters, also delegates to the RA.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew it was going to be controversial. It was brought up last year, and we didn't get a chance to speak on it last year. But unfortunately, it didn't pass. And I know that there was, there were some concerns about and questions about parliamentarian procedure and, Robert's Rules of Order and how everything went down with a possible roll call vote. In the end, we'll do what we got to do next year. And at least the conversation is being had.
Absolutely.
And I, as a Jew, or as a woman of, Hebrew heritage and Jewish heritage, of course, do not hate myself. I get called a self-hating Jew, an anti-Jew, a Jew hater. I do not hate myself nor my family. And I speak out against anti-Semitism all the time. But to link being anti-Israel and anti-Zionist as being anti-Semitic is just purely false.
Yes.
It is not the same thing.
Absolutely. And it's interesting how many people have a hard time distinguishing that. I think you could, it would be a more interesting debate, I think, if they could come up with some better arguments than, you're a Jew hater. If they want to get into, why are you focusing there when there are atrocities all over, right? That's sort of one of the arguments. Although I thought it was very well responded to. I think somebody at one point said, well, that sounds a little bit like saying all lives matter, so why are you focusing on Black Lives Matter? It's the same kind of thing, right?
It is, definitely, definitely.
So one of the questions that sometimes comes up when we're addressing things as a union like reparations or Palestinian human rights is, well, why should educators and unions be involved in these issues? And I feel like you've sort of touched on that some, but what would be your short answer to that? Why should educators and the unions be involved in issues like those?
Education justice is racial justice. Racial justice is education justice. And there's a quote by Paulo Freire that says the educator has the duty of not being neutral.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one aspect of education that is free from injustice. We live in a systemically racist society that was built on, racist and capitalist structures.
Yes.
And imperialism. And so we cannot separate the two. Again, we are in a profession that deals with human beings and families and communities that are profoundly affected by injustices, racial injustices. Everything is connected. When we talk about redlining and housing discrimination and segregation and the disproportionality of suspension rates for Black boys and girls as opposed to in comparison with their white peers for doing the same exact disciplinary infraction, but they're receiving harsher punishments. Everything is connected. And so we have a responsibility. It is our responsibility as educators of Black and brown children and all children that we are on the forefront of the fight for racial justice. And these are the issues that we need to be tackling as educators. If not us, then who?
Yes.
We have the youth in our hands, and not only the youth, but their guardians and their families, and our communities depend on it. Not only that, but we are raising a generation who will be the next leaders in the fight for social change. and for racial justice. And so, you know, again, as I said before, if people, you know, a lot of times I ask new teachers, why did you want to become a teacher? And if they say, like, I really love math, I say, well, that's a fantastic thing, and I'm glad you like math, but maybe education might not be the greatest profession for you, because we're dealing with human beings. My students, you know, we have children that are profoundly traumatized, that come to school with all sorts of traumas, that are traumatized in school. You know, we have a huge police presence in school now, which is justified by school shootings, which, you know, and police presence in schools has a profoundly negative effect, particularly on Black and brown students in the learning process. And, you know, so everything is connected. We have to take a stand for racial justice issues. And I think we're moving in a really good direction. You know, last year we passed a resolution on white supremacy culture, and the year before that, we also had, you know, NBIs relating to the Black Lives Matter School Week of Action. Mm-hmm. Many NBIs this year were around implementing ethnic studies and fighting for ethnic studies. We had another NBI that I was really proud of that talked about the Exonerated Five. You know, Anshon McRae and Kevin Richardson, Yusef Salam, Raymond Santana, and Corey Wise. And, you know, why does that matter to us as educators? Well, these were babies, children, boys that were targeted and criminalized by police and spent their entire childhood behind bars. And that connects directly to the targeting and criminalization of Black boys and brown boys and girls in school.
Yes.
And so these are the things that we need to be on the forefront fighting. And I'm proud of NEA and the delegates for a lot of the work that was done. We have a long way to go.
We do. You know, it's interesting you say everything is connected. And I feel like, yeah, we're starting to talk about racism. We're starting to talk about white supremacy culture. I still don't see the connecting between racism and capitalism.
Yes.
I don't see that at NEA.
No. And, well, there's attempts. There's a group of delegates that are part of a caucus that, unfortunately, you know, they have really great ideas. Unfortunately, they focus, as soon as the delegates hear them say who they are,
yes,
they automatically,
I know exactly who you're talking
off.
About. As a matter of fact, I had one of them on as a guest in my last show.
There we go. And if you actually, you know, if you actually take a look at what they're proposing, they do bring up issues of capitalism and calling out, you know, corporate structures like Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, those new business items either get referred to committee or they fail because they just have people, I think, are too afraid to really, you know, take hard stances on issues of capitalism, because you know, people are brainwashed, really, and we live in a capitalist society.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the word socialism or the word, you know, communism are dirty words and are in the U.S. vocabulary and have been. And so, you know, obviously there are plenty of educators out there, and you know, again, this particular group that do expose those connections between racism and capitalism. But I think that is definitely one area where I don't think we'll get there quite very soon. It's going to take a while.
Yep.
It's going to take a while to get there.
We have to keep at it. Absolutely. We are just about out of time. Do you want to just quickly in the next 30 seconds just talk about anything you're planning over the next year or hope to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, I want to make sure that racial justice is a priority in NEA's budget. Budget is everything. If we want to make real moves, we got to put our money where our mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
I am a huge proponent of restorative justice.
Yes.
And so pushing restorative justice in locally and state nationally is a huge priority. And then I'm also on the National Committee of the Black Lives Matter School Week of Action. And we really want to start focusing. We have four demands that are more systemic changes as opposed to teaching curriculum for a week or putting on events, but hiring more Black teachers, mandated ethnic and Black studies, ending zero tolerance policies and implementing restorative justice, and counselors, not cops.
Yes.
So those four demands are sort of where I will be putting my focus in the upcoming year and working with anyone who's willing to join in on the fight.
Fantastic. Erica, thank you so much for joining us on KBOO. Thanks to our engineer.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Stephen Siegel. Next week, Rachel will be back with me. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
The 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Baby, you understand me now.